I feel like we've all been in some situation where we've all had our own expectations of a relationship that were clouded by our infatuations for the other person. Yes. Look at me using long words. I love that. Hello, everyone. My name is Jason, and welcome back to another episode of the Hit List Podcast, a podcast where me and a guest cross off films from our watch list and discuss them. This is season 6, episode 7, and today I'm joined by a finance bro, but plot twist, she's a girl. Well, welcome, ladies. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
So I want to get started on some questions right here for little icebreakers. Get to know you a little bit more. Get our audience to know you a little bit more. My first question for you is, what are your viewing habits? When you sit down to watch a movie, do you stick to your favorites or watch something new?
You know, I used to watch a lot of movies when I was like in college, and then I got Netflix, and I feel like my attention span just like dropped significantly, so now I can only watch shows unless I go into the movie theater, and then I can watch a whole movie there. So I'm like awful at watching movies now because of Netflix.
So you mostly just watch shows then, right?
Yeah, I go to the movies as much as I can because I know that I will sit down and watch a movie there. But I at home, I watch mostly shows.
Yeah, makes sense. I think when I was younger, I also like watched a lot of movies, but exclusively for Netflix because that was the thing back then. Right. But I guess because I got older, I had a lot more things on my plate and my list keeps getting longer. And this show is meant for me to cross things off my list, but I feel like as I keep talking about movies, I keep adding more. So it's like, what's it called? Sisyphus going up the hill with the boulder.
Yeah.
Yeah. There we go. That's what I feel like. All right.
Yeah. So I have a long, very long list and I keep adding to it too. And I never cross things off. So.
So like how many streaming services do you have then? Like, do you subscribe to?
I have almost all of them. I have
HBO. Oh my God, you really are finance.
Well, I have HBO, or I guess it's Max now.
It's HBO Max in my heart.
Yeah. I have Hulu, Netflix. I steal Disney Plus. And yeah, I think that's it, actually. I don't have that many. I thought there were more.
I have a folder on my phone of all the streaming services I have. And I don't subscribe to all of them. At one point I'd have them and then I stop. So Disney Plus is one of them I have right now. I still have the HBO Max app. I'm not deleting that. Like it's been years since I subscribed to it, but like I love HBO Max. So I'm keeping the app just for prosperity. I don't know. Nostalgia is too soon of a word to say. There's Hoopla, which is for the library. Hulu, which I'm not a big fan of. Canopy, which is awesome. It's the GOAT. Mubi, Netflix, PBS, Plex, Prime Video, and Tubi, which I love Tubi. Like, Tubi is underrated.
I don't have Tubi. I've heard of it. One more. I have an account, but I don't have, like on my phone. It's Freebie. I think that you get that through Amazon, right?
Yeah.
I downloaded that just to watch that show, the jury duty. Yeah. So now I have that. So, but there's like some stuff in there, some good stuff.
I might have to like get that. I feel like I've seen all of Jury Duty just for TikTok clips at this point. And Tubi is it's a free app and you can watch a lot of TV shows and movies, and it includes like stuff that like B movies basically. Mm-hmm. And since it's gotten more popular, they've been like more popular recent movies like John Wick on there, Transformers, really? You know, stuff like that. And it's free. You only had to pay by just watching an ad every 15 minutes. And the ads are like at least a minute long. So it's really worth it. Yeah, it's honestly like I'd much rather have that than pay for Hulu and still have to pay for like the ads. And then they're really long and you can't skip. So yeah, I'd much rather have like free bit ads than you paid bit with ads. So fuck you, Hulu. So what's something that people would be surprised to know about you?
I don't feel like I have a very interesting life. I have an Etsy store.
That's interesting. What do you sell in the Etsy store?
I sell like earrings and bracelets inspired by music. Right now I'm really into like the concerts that I'm going to. So I started with like the Eras tour for Taylor Swift, and now I'm doing for the Jonas Brothers. They're about to start going on tour too. And then I added Barbie yesterday because I'm excited for the Barbie movie.
Like, we share memes a lot about like Barbie, the Barbie movie, and how the same release day is Oppenheimer, which really, it's so crazy how that happened. And I'm not sure if I'm actually going to be able to watch them both on the same day, but I'm going to do my best to watch them both on the same day. You know, start with Oppenheimer and then Barbie as a chaser, because that Oppenheimer will probably be too much afterwards. Like, you realize how scary that situation was. But yeah, that's nice. Etsy store.
Yeah.
And you make them all yourself, right? You don't just buy it from China, I mean, like people do all...
No, it's all like handmade. Like all the earrings are like clay earrings. I cut them out myself. I put the little beads in the strings. It's all me.
Oh, that's really cool. I don't know, you got to plug this stuff, man. You got to plug it. So today we're going to be discussing 500 Days of Summer. 500 Days of Summer is a 2009 American romantic comedy drama film directed by Mark Webb from a screenplay written by Scott Neustadter and Michael H. Weber and produced by Mark Waters. The film stars Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Zooey Deschanel and employs a non-linear narrative structure with the story based upon its male protagonist and his memories of a failed relationship. The film was on Latus's list. Latus, why was this on your list?
You know, I feel like I had seen it everywhere. Just over the years, I've seen like a lot of posts about it. And I always like heard 500 Days of Summer, 500 Days of Summer. And I used to be a very big rom-com girl. So that was always like obviously on the list because that's like super big. But I just never got to it. I don't know why. Maybe I just couldn't find it for free back in the day when I didn't have streaming services because I was broke college girl. Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, it had just always been on my list. I used to watch like any rom-com that I could find. Like my parents used to have, when they had cable, we would get like movies, like free movies. They would rotate them. And I would just like go through to the rom-com section every time I was at home and just like watch everything I could. So, but I never ran into 500 Days of Summer. So I guess I never found it.
I guess because this film isn't like a romantic comedy. It's, as Mark Webb describes it, it's a coming of age story disguised as a romantic comedy.
Yeah, after watching it, I had always heard it as a romantic comedy, but after watching it, I would disagree it's a romantic comedy. No. I would not categorize it as that.
Yeah, it's more drama than comedy, actually.
There's very little happiness.
So what did you think of it?
I really liked it. I am a sucker for non-linear movies. Like, I love, like, time hops, all of that. It's amazing to me. Especially when, like, I didn't know anything about the movie. I tried to go into movies without, like, knowing anything about it. So when it's, like, the plot twist is that it starts at, like, the end and then it goes backwards and all that. I was very surprised by it. I really liked it.
Yeah. I saw this movie years ago, like, I mean, I'm at least 2015, 2016. And I watched it mostly for Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And because I think at the time I was also rewatching New Girl. And I was like, what was Zooey Deschanel doing before, like, New Girl? Like, I knew she was in movies. Like, I watched it, like, oh, okay. Okay. I can see that. And the whole time I'm thinking, like, because in New Girl, you know, she plays a character who's like trying to find love, you know.
Total opposite.
Yeah, exactly. Really. She's basically Tom in New Girl. And I was just thinking, like, wouldn't it have been crazy if Joseph Gordon-Levitt like guest starred in New Girl? And I never finished like seasons 4 and 5 because I feel like up to season 3, that's like one of my favorite seasons. So I don't want to go beyond. It's like with The Office. Like, I don't watch after Michael Scott leaves. I tried, but I don't want to. So if Joseph Gordon-Levitt did make an appearance in those final seasons, I don't know. But it would have been crazy if he actually did. So, yeah.
Yeah,
so,
I feel like it's weird seeing Zooey Deschanel, like, outside of New Girl now. Because all I see is New Girl. All I see is Jess. It's weird. It's kind of like Michael Scott. You're never going to see, you know.
And Steve Carell is he's a really good actor. Like, he can do more than just comedy. He's done, like, a dramatic stuff with, what's his name? I hate saying this, but the guy who played the Riddler in the Batman. He did Little Miss Sunshine with him.
Yeah.
Way back when. So he's able to do a lot of stuff. And you can even see in some interviews, like, he doesn't want to just talk about Michael Scott, because he's there's so much more to him than just Michael Scott. But that's what people remember him as.
Right.
But yeah, so what were your thoughts going through your head as this relationship unfolded through your eyes when you were watching the movie?
You know, I really thought they were going to end up together. they teased it at the beginning. She had like the wedding band on. And I was
did. They did this like
that. They're going to end up together. And then they didn't. I was like, what? I was very confused by that. The entire time I was like, oh, it's leading up to them getting back together. And then she was engaged to someone else. And then she had the wedding. I was like, oh, she's going to walk out at the wedding. And then she didn't. And then she like ran into him. I was like, you're messing with my feelings here.
You know about the basic premise of The Graduate, right?
I've never seen The Graduate.
Okay, so I haven't either, but I do know at the end of the film, the woman leaves the altar and goes with the guy, and they run away together, right? And then, like, it looks like it's a happy ending, but this shot still continues, and, like, slowly they smile to, like, oh, we just, like, you can see in their face, we just made a huge mistake, right? And that's kind of like when Summer was watching it, she cried. And when Tom watched it, when he first saw it, he had a completely misunderstanding behind the scene. He thought it was a romantic happy ending. But when Summer saw it, she cried because she kind of felt like, oh, that's what this relationship is going to be like with Tom. And that's why she like had to leave, you know?
That was the movie they were watching. I did not catch that.
So how do you think this film like explored like hopes and dreams? Do you think they're like more pessimistic, more optimistic about hopes and dreams?
I think it depends on like the character. I think that she definitely had a more pessimistic look at the beginning, and he had a very optimistic look, and then it kind of flip-flopped, and he saw all the negative and she saw all the positive. Surprisingly, one character I really liked was his little sister. she kept it going, and she was very real about it. Not even like just pessimistic or, you know, optimistic. She was just kind of like real. Like, I think that I really liked the line at the end when she told him, like, I think that you're just looking back at the positives. I think that you really need to go back and look at your relationship because there was a lot of negatives. I really liked that line, that character. Yeah. I don't know. I resonated with her.
When I first saw this movie, I really liked it. I'm like, oh, okay. This is very enlightening. You know, I never really saw it like that. I've been pretty selfish. Watching it again years later after going through a few relationships, I'm like, damn, I hate Tom. He reminds me of myself. And like, I've also been through like Summer's situation as well. Like, oh, yeah, we have very completely different views of how this relationship is going to go. I have to go. So it's kind of weird like seeing it like first time when you're younger and then seeing it young after when you're older. Yeah, it was like, damn.
Yeah.
What did you think about the documentary in the film?
The documentary, like when the love part about 3/4 through.
Yeah, when they're like, it's like in black and white and different characters are talking to the camera about like what they think about love.
Yeah. I really, I thought the manager was the one that stuck with me. He said like the greeting card line. He was like, yes, that was one of our greeting cards. And no, I didn't write it, but it still means the same. I really like that. I really like that part. I thought that the film, there was a lot of times where it just like it was real, or you know, realism all throughout, and then it would just step like break the fourth wall type thing, or like just jump genres into a musical. I really liked that it did that. I thought it was a really cool like little thing to have in the beginning, in the middle of it.
Yeah, there's definitely some aspects to the film that I like, and even though I'm not well versed into all of cinema, it may seem like I am, but I'm not, there are some French new wave montages that happened in the film that I was like, oh, I know that's French new wave. I don't know wait which French movie exactly, but it's French new wave, which is like when Tom is like talking about how much he loves someone, like, I love her smile, I love her knees, whatever, and it's like a montage of like him looking down at Summer, and then the same montage, like same shots, and he says, like, I hate Summer. I hate how she smacks her lips right before she speaks. I hate her knees. I hate her weird heart, you know, mole.
I think he called it, like, cockroach mole.
Yeah, cockroach mole. So it's like there he's Mark Webb is very familiar with like film, and before this he was directing music videos. That's how he made his living, directing music videos. And I believe because of the success of this movie, he later went on to direct The Amazing Spider-Man and The Amazing Spider-Man 2. And I think it makes sense because he's able to capture like the city feel. It was shot in LA, so it makes sense he was able to capture that. But like he was able to capture it in a way that feels like a movie.
Right. I was talking about it earlier. It has like that very specific early 2000s movie vibe. Like I exactly. don't know how to explain what the vibe is, but that movie has it.
And I think it has to do with like the way they made it. They designed it with the intention of it being timeless. So like they didn't make any mention of like what year it was. The style of clothing they were wearing wasn't reflective of like the year it was shot, because it was released in 2009. And I'm not sure what the fashion was like back then, but for these characters, they portrayed them in like clothing that office. Like would, yeah, office clothing. And then, you know, when Tom's out and about, he's wearing like slacks, like a sweater vest, you know, stuff like that. Summer's wearing like aesthetically pleasing clothing, you know. It's not that like if she wore it now, it wouldn't make it look different. Like it wouldn't feel different, right. If that makes sense.
Her wardrobe. She was great.
Yeah. I won't necessarily use Tom's sweater vest, but I would like his apartment. That was a huge apartment.
Yeah. I liked hers because it was like tiny and cozy, but it had like a lot of personality. Like everywhere mm-hmm. you looked, there was like a little detail that gave you a glimpse into her. And I liked that.
Yeah. So I have a question for you because I want to hear a woman's perspective about this. Did you catch the red flags? In the first story, like when he says to like Chloe's character, like what happened at the breakup,
the red flags, like when he's explaining it or as I'm watching it unfold.
Well, I guess when he first explains it and then as you're watching it unfold.
Well, the red flag for me was that he didn't see any negatives, and that's why I really liked at the end when she's like, I think you need to look back, because there were definitely some negatives and that should have been like an obvious to you. And I really liked, because after that there was like a little montage of like little moments that they went back to at the end, and had like you saw that she was like, she looked down, she looked like kind of sad, she didn't really look like she was as into it, and he kept like trying and pushing. I really really liked that part. I think that the only red flag I saw was that he just didn't see any negatives.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what I first noticed as well, where, like, didn't notice any, like, no fighting, like, nothing, like, she didn't annoy you in any way. She didn't feel annoyed. You didn't catch that. And it just shows how much growing he still had to go through.
Right.
Yeah, it's like he was very selfish whenever he, like, was interacting with her, especially, like, when he was first in her apartment. She told him something that she never told anyone else, and she's like, wow, I never told anyone about that. And he's like, oh well, it must be something special. Like, no dude, he was using it as himself being something special, but not the relationship being something special. You know, so yeah, it's just like reflection. You know, was there anything else that like caught your eye about this film?
I really like that the little sister was like a kid. I don't know. I feel like it's really cool to have a kid be the one that gives you a reality check. You know, like she was at that point in his life, she was more emotionally mature than he was. I really like that about it. There are a lot of people that were not big yet that are big today. You know, like the manager went on to
Clark
be,
Gregg.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah, he went on to be in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and, you know. I can't remember Yvette. I can't remember her last name.
Yvette Nicole Brown.
Yeah, in Community. Like, I'm like, all these people are like in the background.
That was the same year Community came out too. So
it was
2009.
So she got in kind of like her big break, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's like, you're not supposed to be in the background. You're much better than that.
Yeah. Who else? Wasn't that guy like his friend like in Criminal Minds or something?
Yes.
Okay, that's why he looks familiar.
Yeah, I looked him up because I was like, he looks familiar. But yeah, he's in Criminal Minds. I think he like directed part of it too.
Really?
Yeah. Or that's what it said in his Wikipedia.
Yeah, so I guess like some people like have like a different interpretation about this movie when it came out. There's a lot of misunderstandings of like how this was presented. A lot of people view Summer as like a villain. But my question for you is like, who did you sympathize with in this relationship? Like, did you sympathize with Tom or Summer? A little bit of both?
I think that at the beginning, because I hadn't seen everything, I sympathized with him. I was like, oh, I've had my heart broken before. I feel you. And she's such a bitch for doing that. And then and then as he like looked back on it and I started seeing like all like her point of view. Not really her point of view, but like I saw her more of like what she actually did. She didn't just like break his heart. She just wasn't happy in the relationship, and she ended it in a good way. Like, she was not a bad person. Right. And there were all these red flags that he should have seen coming that he didn't.
Yeah, especially because, like, she said, like, you're happy? Like, remember she said you're happy? And then he doesn't see, like, it's, and the film doesn't show it really, like, how, like, they weren't really fighting. It just shows his perspective. And it's really, like, really good use of using an unreliable narrator. And right. how his friends know him, right? They've seen this before. So, like, they know when he's telling them something, he's not telling the full truth, or he's telling his own version of events. And us as the audience, we don't know him. You know, we just met this guy. So, for all we know, he's telling the truth. So, everything that happens, it's truth to us until it's revealed later. He has some, like, revelations, like, oh, it wasn't all the truth. And so, that's why you see not just different perspective, but, like, unveiling like all the layers that happen, like and seeing like the context of everything that happened within the relationship. So yeah, I found how like his friends weren't fooled when he said he was in love. They're like, oh no. Yeah. But like for us, we were like, oh, what do you mean? What's going on? Like, oh, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
It makes a lot more sense. Yeah, they really subverted the idea of happily ever after. They did trick us. Like it looked like
I was so mad.
And you know what's crazy? I loved How I Met Your Mother growing up, because like growing up it was still like being released, you know.
Yeah.
And
then you got to the ending and now you hate it.
Exactly, right? Exactly. So I kind of like grew up like I understand Tom's view, like how his view of love was like how do I say the word? It was manipulated by media in a way. And I don't like using the word manipulated, but it was shaped by media.
Yeah.
Especially like TV shows and romantic comedies. It gave him his own view of like how love is. Guy winning the girl, guy losing girl, guy winning girl back. And for a while there, I kind of grew up the same thing too. Like, not that like if I ever found the one, I'd be in love. I'd finally be happy. But like I used to believe in the one, not necessarily anymore. I kind of realized, oh, there's a lot of people in the world. There's like, what, 8 billion people in the world? There's only one. We're all yeah. I have one.
One chance.
One. There's only one chance? So yeah, it was, in a way, that's why I liked the movie when it first came out, because it was just like the breaking of like that ideology that I think was, it was like an unhealthy one to have in the first place. So that's why I really related to him and that. And then also hated how, oh, I ended up becoming him a little bit. So I was like, ugh. Okay, yeah. it's like a necessary reality check, but it's like, ugh, why?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to talk about the film before you talk about production?
You know, I really liked at the end when the new, or not the new girl, but like the girl that you pretend, or you, it's supposedly like the one she's going to end up with, her name's Autumn. Yeah. I really like that. I also really like, every time I've heard 500 Days of Summer, I always thought, like, it's 500 days of the season summer. Like,
right.
Just a bunch of different summers. And then it's revealed that it's her name. I was like, that is such a cool idea. And then last thing that I really liked was at the beginning was, like, this story is not based on anybody. It's like a coincidence.
Except for you, Jenny.
Yeah. Bitch. I thought that was so funny. Immediately hugged me in.
Yeah. It's surprising how it actually is about a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. You seen How I Met Your Mother, right?
Yes.
Okay. You remember that one episode where Ted realizes there's a movie and it's based on him? but he can't really figure out why. And then he goes to see, like, the writer is, like, the new husband of his ex.
Yeah, the husband of his ex, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like, that's that in real life. Like, that's, like, I don't say that's, like, Taylor Swift, because Taylor Swift writes songs about, like, exes or whatever. But that's kind of, like, it's really funny how that happened. And what's funny is, like, the writer, when he showed it to the actual woman that it's based on, she said, oh, she relates to Tom more.
Really?
Yeah. It's really funny how that turns out. I feel like we've all been in Tom's situation where we've had our own expectations of a relationship that were clouded by our infatuations for the other person. Yes. Look at me using long words. I love that. So at the end, you know how she's with him at the park and, you know, his favorite spot. So something I didn't realize until I watched the commentary, it's implied that she's not really there. She's there in his head. So
really?
It's like,
I didn't catch that.
I didn't catch that either. There's no mention of that at all. Like, it looks like she's actually there, you know? Mark Webb, he says, like, kind of like whenever you go for a breakup, you kind of have like your own ritual of closure. And sometimes we don't actually get to meet the person for closure. So you kind of have to go for it yourself. So I think that was what he meant by that. That's probably why it's interpreted as her not really being there. It's just in his head. I like the idea that she actually met him and just told him, like, I'm sorry. It's just what we had wasn't really real. And he's like, well, why'd you dance with me? Like, because I wanted to dance with you. I mean, he starts to realize who she really is. Like, she's just a person who does what she wants.
Right. I also really like the idea that, you know, he took her there because that was his favorite spot and it became one of her favorite spots. And that's like something she took from their relationship.
Yeah.
Like something she kept.
Like sweaters.
Yeah.
I feel like Schmidt right there. Like sweaters. Why are you saying like that, Schmidt? What? Sweaters? Yeah. And also the thing with Autumn at the end, I was like, yo, here we go again. I don't think he'll make the same mistakes in that relationship, but I think it'll be like different mistakes, if that makes sense. Like I believe he learned what he went through, but I still think like there's some of him like still romanticizing this relationship with her.
Yeah.
And he just met her.
But I also think that he learned from Summer to be more spontaneous, and that's why he like immediately asked for Summer. He like prolonged it until she had to be the one to ask him.
That was so funny. Like, he tried to like manufacture like a meet cute with her.
Yeah.
With like the Smiths, like just playing it like on his computer, like, is she walking this way? Oh damn it. She's not walking this way. Turn it off. Yeah, that's really you're right. I didn't even catch that. Look at you. Yeah, honestly, if I were him, I would have done the same thing. Yeah. That's Minka Kelly right there. I would have done the same thing. It's called shooting your shot, guys. Just shoot it. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Michael Scott.
After this, we're gonna talk about production. And now we're back talking about production. So for the production of this film, for writing this film, the co-writer of the film is Scott Neustadter. He admitted the film is based on a real romance. He explains that he met the real girl who inspired the character Summer as a student at the London School of Economics. He was rebounding from a bad breakup back home and promptly fell, quote, crazily, madly, hopelessly in love with the girl who returned his kisses, but not his ardor. The ending relationship was like painful and, you know, awful for him. So it prompted him to co-write the film with Michael Weber. And when he later showed the script to Summer, like the real life woman, she says she related more to the Tom character. And I mentioned it here as well, where like director Mark Webb described the film as more of a coming of age story as opposed to a rom-com. He stated, "We arrive at a different conclusion for one thing. Plus, most romantic comedies are more loyal to a formula than to emotional truth. It's about happiness and learning that you'll find it within yourself rather than the big blue eyes of the girl in the cubicle down the hall. I wanted to make an unsentimental movie and an uncynical movie. In my mind, I wanted it to be something you could dance to. That's why we put a parentheses in the title. It's like a pop song in movie form. It's not a big film. It's not about war or poverty. It's about 500 days in a young guy's relationship, but it's no less deserving of scrutiny. When your heart is first broken, it consumes you. And it's emotion I wanted to make a movie about before I forgot how it felt." I kind of relate to that because, totally unrelated, I was unemployed for a while, and I know exactly how that feels and how hopeless you feel in that moment. And now that I'm employed, I've been employed for a few months now, I'm starting to lose that feeling, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I need to make a movie based on like being unemployed soon. And it's going to be a very depressing one.
Well, I feel like there's a couple of those, you know, out there. I think you would definitely relate to people nowadays. A lot of people getting laid off. I have to say, when I saw all the tech layoffs, I got scared. But thankfully, I'm in a pretty like recession-proof company now, so I am very thankful. Cause like my old company, like where I was just a year ago, just laid off like 5% of its workforce. So
wow.
I'm like, that would have definitely been me, and I am very glad that it's not.
Yeah, for me, it's like, I have not a very different journey from my college to career. It's just like took me longer to go through it. And then most people that I know, especially for HSF, were able to get a job right after college, right? Or they had really good internships during college. I didn't get that. I had to create the opportunities for myself, and anything I wanted to learn on the internship, I just learned by myself. And man, it's getting like really veer off. I'm going to talk about it real quick. I could see after like a few months how me not having the internships that I wanted to take affected my career like in the long term. So it felt very depressing. Like I felt like I was fighting up a hill just to like get the opportunity. So like even though I knew I was capable of doing everything, I had like the leadership skills, I had like the skills to like learn and grow, and I was very able to do it, I just wasn't getting anything. So I felt very hopeless. So I know how it feels to be unemployed, but I feel like I'm starting to lose that feeling, and I need to like write it down, because I feel like a lot of people are in my situation similarly, but it just feels like you're alone when you're in it, you know?
Yeah, right.
So let's get back to the podcast. So Webb also stated that Deschanel's character Summer is based on a stock character type. He says, quote, "Yes, Summer is an immature view of a woman. She's Tom's view of a woman. He doesn't see her complexity, and the consequence for him is heartbreak. In Tom's eyes, Summer is perfection, but perfection has no depth. Summer's not a girl, she's a phase." And we see that. Like,
right.
How he goes from like loving her, and I say that loving in quotes, to like despising her. Because he never really knew her, and he never really cared to really learn about her. Like in the film, she's like getting to know him. She's like asking him like, "Well, why aren't you an architect? Like, why are you here, still here at the green card company?" And she even says later on when he's at her party, she's like, "He could be a really good architect if he wanted to," because she knows him.
Yeah, I feel like he never really like explored anything about her. Like, we never really learned like her interests or anything about
exactly.
her. It's just him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All we knew about her was that like a lot of men liked her. She had the Summer effect, or like everywhere she went had like a positive effect on the community because they wanted to be around her.
Yeah.
I found that very funny.
But I feel like if you just like look at her apartment, like there's so many little details that like give mm-hmm. her personality that he just never cared to explore. Like he just kind of like touched the things, but he never like asked about it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Like what was that? What was that thing that she had, like the origami cranes, whatever?
Yeah.
Like what was that about? Like did she make that herself? Did she buy that? No, he didn't care.
Did she also have like one of those ball hats, like the old timey, like
the
20s.
Bowler hats.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, she had those.
Why do you have that? Why do you have that on top of books? Like, what? What are those books?
Yeah,
like he never explored her.
I don't know why you just reminded me of like what's his name, Cole Sprouse. How do you lose a woman? You forget to cherish her. You forget to cherish her.
Yeah.
So Gordon Levitt explained that he was drawn to the role of Tom because of the relatability of the character. He said, quote, "I've had my heart broken before. Truly, truly broken. But when I look back at me in the broken, heartbroken phrase, it's pretty hilarious because it felt so much more extreme than it really was. One of the things I love about 500 Days of Summer is that it doesn't make light of what we go through in romances, but is honest about it and shows it for what it is, which is often profoundly funny." So this film was originally set in San Francisco, but it was later moved to Los Angeles, and they had to rewrite the script to make better use of the locations, especially because Tom is interested in architecture. So they shot around places like the Los Angeles Music Center and the towers at California Plaza and the older Fine Arts Building. And there was like the building where he goes for the interview that was used specifically for that scene. It's an actual building. So I thought that was pretty cool. And it's interesting because I didn't even notice this until like I read this bit. Dr. Chris Luckenbill, he wrote an article about the cinematic cartography of this film. And he suggested like the location of like the park that Tom Sawyer Park, it mirrors his own view of the world because he only perceives the beauty of the building surrounding them and only acknowledges like the parking lot when Summer points it out to him. So like, she's like, oh, it looks beautiful. Okay, what's that parking lot over there, though? So we only see his view of, like, this parking lot. Not the parking lot, but, like, of the city landscape.
The city.
And then, like, later on, you actually get to see the parking lot. It's just, like, a huge, like, empty parking lot. And he says Tom is also unable to see beyond his expectations of hopeless romance. So it's, like, parallels right there. Symbolism.
Yeah. I have to say, after going to Los Angeles, like they weren't to the right places in Los Angeles. Because when I was there, I did not see all those pretty buildings.
That's what I knew about this before I went. Like for like the conference that we met each other at the HSF Media and Entertainment Summit. So we were in Hollywood. All right. And for years, I knew that, like, Hollywood wasn't the best place to visit when you go to L.A. because it's, like, the touristy spot. That's where all the tourists go. And it's not very safe after dark or whatever. And so I was like, I kind of knew that. And then I go there and like, yo, this is just a city, man.
Like, and not a very good one either.
Exactly. Like, we were there and like, oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. And it sucks because, like, for that trip, we didn't get to explore Hollywood. We were just there all day for the conferences, like literally from the morning until like late at night. So
did you ever go out afterwards?
I did. I went to like the Griffith Observatory. Yeah, that was nice. What else? Also went out a couple of times out at night with some of the groups, but
I just went to In-N-Out. I was so tired. I just went to sleep after every night, except the one night I went to In-N-Out.
Yeah, I went to In-N-Out. And I was also very unimpressive In-N-Out. For years, I wanted to try In-N-Out.
It is so overrated.
Exactly. It's stock food. Yeah. Like, that's why I call it stock. You know how there's stock photos, stock images? That's what it felt like. It felt like stock food, In-N-Out. And then I hate how people are like, oh, you didn't try this or you didn't try that. No. You told me to try the burgers. And I tried
the
burgers.
That's what they're known for.
That's what they're known for. So, like, if I had to, like, try to get a secret item that's not even on the menu to, like it, but it's not good, you're just creating ingredients around something that you perceive as great, which is exactly how Tom views Summer here. He projects his own views on her. And doesn't really consider who she really is. We're back to 500 Days of Summer. I was able to bring it back. So as far as the cultural impact, what are you familiar with the impact of this film? Like, I know you heard about this film for years, but what did you hear about it?
You know, I'm going to be honest. I knew nothing about it except that it was a rom-com, which I completely disagree. It is not a rom-com.
It's not.
So after watching it, I was like, I'm kind of glad it wasn't a rom-com because I feel like I would have liked it less. Like, I went through the phase where all I watched was rom-coms, like, you know, 27 Dresses, Life as We Know It, like, all of those big movies. And now I feel like if I go back, I'm going to find those so cringy. So I'm very glad that it was not a rom-com because I really, really liked it as it was, which was, like, kind of like an unconventional look of love, really.
Thing is, I grew up like not liking rom-coms because just like my sister, she watched all the rom-coms. Like, I think my sister watches more movies than me, honestly, and she doesn't care if it's good or bad, she'll watch it.
That used to be me, yeah, and that's why I can't do it anymore.
So she watched a lot of romantic comedies and I hated them because they're just so stupid and I'm like, why are they doing that, whatever. So like for the longest time I just never really considered rom-coms, like a genre to like appreciate until I saw Confessions of a Shopaholic, and I really liked that movie. For a while there, it was one of my favorite films. And I'm not being ironic. I actually mean it. I really like Confessions of a Shopaholic. It's still like it has this general feel of it. But I heard like 500 Days of Summer was different, so I'll try that. I'm like, oh, okay. So I for sure am never gonna watch a romantic comedy after this because they just ruined it for me. So as far as like cultural impact, for years there have been like misreadings about this film where Summer was seen as a villain and Tom was seen as like, I don't want to say the victim, but like the lone, but like the guy to feel sympathy for. And I'm watching this. I watched this when I was like, what, 19 or something, maybe even younger. And even then I'm like, I don't see how she's the villain. Like she stated clearly that she didn't want to be in anything serious. And she, like for her body language, she showed like she wasn't interested in like continuing forward with the relationship as well. So I don't see how she's the bad guy. And yeah, that's just how I saw it. Like there's been like, I've seen some tweets of like people saying like, oh, if that was me, if I was Summer, I would never have left him. And then Joseph Gordon-Levitt like actually replied like, no, watch it again and see it from Summer's point of view. Or like if the actor who played the role replies to you on Twitter, like, yeah, you really misread the film. He has to tell you like, watch it again, but from Summer's point of view. Yeah, there was like an interview with Entertainment Weekly about the 10th anniversary of the film's release. Joseph, like he's fully like on Summer's side. Like he says she's completely honest throughout the entire movie. And Tom just has like a mildly delusional obsession with her and projects all these fantasies. He even has like that musical number, which, you know, pretty accurate after, you know, after a night out with someone. You get that feeling, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not falling in love with the person. It's falling in love with the idea of the person. And for years, people were like misinterpreting it. And I feel like now people are like just trying to see, oh, okay, I see it now. But there's one. Oh, there he is. There's one moment that I kind of feel for Tom. And that's when after like karaoke, she's like, oh, I just want to be friends. Like, oh, okay, we can be friends. And then after the work the next day, when he's in the copy room, she comes up to him and just kisses him in the mouth. I'm like, what is he supposed to do with that? Like, I know she's the type of character that just does what she wants, but like, why would you just kiss him in the copy room?
I mean, see, at the end, when he's like going through the bad stuff, like all the red flags in the montage, he sees like a very similar moment where she just like walks past him. And I'm almost like kind of like, I almost kind of saw it as like he just like imagined it. Like if that moment was like in like so much better in his head than it actually was. You know, I feel like the entire movie he was like exaggerating the relationship. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that moment, since we're seeing it from his point of view, right? And he's the unreliable narrator, I feel like it was not as awesome as it was at the beginning. I feel like it was just kind of like, well, you know, and he just walked past and then he just like created this whole fantasy in his head about her. I feel like he definitely, like there's definitely some moments that like, if you go back after the end and you see the montage at the end, like there's definitely some moments that he saw better than they actually were. So I don't know, but that's just my interpretation of it. I'm sure that the director spent something completely different.
So you're saying like you thought that was like not real, the kiss, or just?
I feel like it wasn't. I feel like
he imagined it.
I feel like he didn't imagine like the kiss, but it was not as like spontaneous and like amazing and left him breathless as it was when we saw it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Never really considered that. What I found interesting is that in the commentary there were also, it was with Mark Webb, the writer. Joseph Gordon-Levitt in there, and like another guy, I forgot his name, I'm sorry. You know that moment she says, yeah, so how was your weekend? It was good. And they were discussing, like, wait, what does she mean by that? Like, it was good. Like, oh, she's punishing him for, like, asking. Like, what? Why was she punishing him for asking? He's just trying to make a small conversation. She's a new girl, and he's trying to, like, get to know her a little bit. You know, that's it. And they go over this for, like, 8 minutes. Just that little part. And the movie keeps playing. And it's like, that's really funny. You guys keep going over this. Like, guys, you're discussing something over a movie that you guys made, right?
Yeah, I feel like they're definitely, like, overreading into how she said that. She did not mean it. How they were interpreting it.
Because they shot it two ways. They shot it like, oh, it was good. It was good. And they shot it was good. And they found that, like, just putting it was good, it had more, like, ambiguity around it, right? Mm-hmm. They could also just be Tom, like, misinterpreting what she meant. Like, saying, like, he heard it a different way. She said it one way, but he heard it a different way. So I think she just meant, oh, it was good. It was good.
It's just the way that he remembers it. Just like at the end when he like finds out that she's engaged and you see like reality versus expectations. I feel like the entire movie leading up to that, we were watching like the expectations part, not the reality part. And then after this, you saw like the expectations like fade away and it was just the reality. And after that, it was reality. But I feel like up until that moment, everything was like super romanticized in his head.
Exactly. Exactly. So I actually want to break down the expectations versus reality scene, because I'm pretty sure that is the inspiration behind that meme, expectations versus reality. And I'm not well versed in internet history, especially internet meme history, but I'm very, when that came out, expectations versus reality, there were a whole bunch of memes of like that going around like early 2010s. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure this film is the inspiration for that. Someone should do like a complete analysis on this, because I think this is very important history right here. Meme history. But anyway, this scene is like a perfect example of shooting the same scene twice. And Studio Binder did a really good video about this, and I'm basically just like going with notes that I learned from that video. But in the scene, you see that it's like left and right. On the left, you see expectations of Tom, how Tom believes this the party's gonna play out. On the right, it's the reality of what's actually going on. So they first start out the same way, where he knocks on the door, she opens and lets him in, but like how she interacts with him is very different. On the first one, it's more close-up shots, more out of it's like shallow focus, focuses on Summer. And she's like excited to see him. The body language is very like, oh, very happy to see you here. And on the reality side, it's more of a neutral shot. It's like a two shot. It's like a wide angle. Not necessarily a wide angle, but still it shows both of them to see. And she's like, oh, hey, she's like she's friendly, you know, cordial with him, but not very flirty with him. And then she does like a little awkward hug, you know, like just like a friendly hug, you know.
Yeah.
And when she lets him in, it's also very subtle. It's like when she lets him in the expectation, she's like still looking at him as he walks in. But as she lets him in the reality, she like looks away as she lets him in. Just that's just her letting him in. And then you see further in the left side, the expectation, you see him nodding towards the people. And you know, it seems more welcoming. Someone nods back at him. And then in the reality, he nods towards people, but there's a lot more people in the scene and no one makes any motion for him. Like there's a lot more people there. They don't really care. There's like at least 10 people there. And then it goes further where they're outside on the rooftop and the expectations that they're close together. They're like literally center frame right next to each other. And on a reality show, they're on opposite ends of the frame. So like he's on the left, she's on the right of the frame. And there's like people separating between them. And expectations, I keep going back and forth because I like seeing that's how I was playing it in my head. It's like there's like this, the set design is also very different. There's white cloth, there's wine glasses, there's a lot of lights. I didn't notice it either until I watched it again. And it's like slowly like zooming in, like closing in on them as they're on the table, like seeing them like get to closer together. And then on the realities, it's like the actual conversation, like, well, why are you a greeting card? Like, I work for a greeting card. How'd you go from that, from architecture or whatever? And it just plays like a normal scene, you know? And later on, you see how he's by himself. He's drinking a lot more. And in the expectations, it gets more romantic. And then like the ultimate climax of a romantic scene where they're like making out and then the door slowly closes. And a door signifies like when the border between expectations and reality closes out. So like reality wins in this end. And you see that Summer has an engagement ring. And you realize, oh, he wasn't paying attention. But there were clues there that she was actually had it on her ring on her finger the whole time. It was just like hidden at most times. Like she had it like behind something or she had something else in her hand. But you don't notice it until right at the moment, like, oh, it was there the whole time. Right. So, yeah, I really like that whole breakdown.
I loved that little sequence of the two. That like sold the entire movie for me because I really feel like up until that point, we were just seeing the expectations part. And then you saw like the reality just push it out.
Yeah.
I thought that was so good. I was like, okay, from now on, it's just reality. That was the best part.
Yeah, and also because the song, I had my subtitles on, so the singer, she's basically narrating the song as he's going walking up the stairs. He never saw it coming, never saw it coming at all. Like I was like, bro, he really didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt heartbroken for him. There have been a couple moments there where someone got married or engaged, and I was like heartbroken. That's why when I go on Facebook, I hide when I see a new engagement post. Like, hide. Do you think that's why he directed Spider-Man? Do you think that's why he was chosen?
I don't know. I didn't even know he directed Spider-Man, I'm going to be honest. I had heard the name. Like, the name when I saw it pop up, I was like, that sounds familiar, but I have no idea what he's done.
Yeah. I feel like it was really fitting. His last name is Webb, and he went on to direct the Amazing Spider-Man. I was like, it's like he was made for this, you know?
Unpopular opinion, I actually kind of like the Amazing Spider-Man movies.
You liked it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked the first one. I was not a big fan of the second one.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of the second one, except that scene, the last like 15 minutes broke my heart so hard. I have never gotten over it. I think about that so much more than I probably should. Like, her body just, ugh. Yeah.
Yeah. I hurt my neck there a little bit. real quick, because I need to mention this every time Spider-Man is mentioned, but I hated No Way Home. Anyway.
I completely disagree with you. I love that movie.
I have a whole thesis. I don't have a whole thesis, but I feel like if I had more dedication towards writing, I would actually write out a thesis of why I think that's the weakest Spider-Man movie of them all. But I will not discuss it because we're talking about 500 Days of Summer. So I want to go a little bit of trivia from this movie that I found on IMDb that I found was interesting. According to the DVD commentary, one of the film's writers estimates that 75% of the film actually happened to him, which I find very depressing. But I'm glad he wrote it down in the film. Maybe
I feel like 75% of the film has happened to all of us.
If not with one person, probably with a bunch of different people.
Yeah.
It was also featured in 2006 Blacklist, which is a list of the most liked unmade scripts of the year. The film's blue-centric color was done because it brought out Zooey Deschanel's eyes. So that's why you see a lot her wearing blue a lot. And the studio never intended to include a documentary about love in the film, even going so far as to tell director Mark Webb to not film it. But the audience's reaction during the first test screening convinced them otherwise. It was originally going to be much longer, the documentary about love, and it would have included opinions from Summer, Millie, and Tom's mother, but it just didn't happen, which I think worked well because
there were moments just being the guys.
Yeah, yeah, and it was funnier.
Yeah.
When you talk about his dream world, like, yo, but dream girl, she probably has like a bigger rack, but my girl, she's better than a dream girl because she's real. I'm like, oh, that's sweet. Yeah. That's sweet. And the black and white movies that Tom watches at the cinema, you know, where he's the main character, they're parodies of movies directed by Ingmar Bergman. The greeting card office and Tom's apartment were filmed in the same building. I found that really interesting. Anything else pops up in your head that you want to discuss?
Yeah. Talking about the little documentary, I really liked how Tom was the last one and he didn't have an answer because he didn't know what love actually was. He thought he did, and that's why he was so, you know, head over heels, but he wasn't. He didn't see anything.
Yeah.
He didn't see, yeah. I really liked that part.
So the musical scene, you know, where he's dancing in the park, apparently that's the day where everyone showed up. Even though they weren't in the scene, everyone showed up just to see it, like, happen. And Joseph, he described it as one of his best days ever because he loves musicals and he loved the idea of being like Michael Jackson, where like you're dancing in front of all these dancers, kind of like in Thriller when Michael Jackson does that. So yeah, it's like very, I like that musical. Like I most people don't know I'm a huge fan of musicals, but I really love musicals, and any way to incorporate them into like a regular movie that's not a musical, I love it. Like I, if you can just inject some type of musical into like a war movie, I will love it.
Yeah, I really liked, I for some reason I thought, I mean, I don't think this is right, but I thought that Joseph Gordon-Levitt was like on Broadway or something. Like I have this fake memory. So when I was like, oh, of course they're gonna have him dance, because why wouldn't you? It's just, but I don't think he's actually been, I think it's just like a fake memory I implanted in my head for some reason. But I really liked it because it was just like his feelings, and that's like another point where he just like broke away. He saw the whole music video in his head, right? it was expectations. That's not actually how it happened. I really, really liked that part. And also another part that I really liked was the, what's it called? The karaoke parts at the beginning. Zooey Deschanel is actually a really good singer, and mm-hmm. I don't know how she was able to make it seem like she wasn't.
Right.
Like, you have to be such a good actor to not, to like sing good and then act like you don't.
It's really a talent unto itself to like be really good, but then act like you're not. Like, right. if you ever seen like the Big Bang Theory, there's like the episode where like he's like doing like the flag episode, like he's like his web series on flags with Amy. He's like, hello, these are flags. Yes. And this is an ordinary flag. Yeah. It's really, because like you can see how bad they are, but it's really hard to look bad when you're good.
Right.
So that concludes our conversation today. Thank you so much, Latest, for being here. Really like talking about 500 Days of Summer with you.
Thank you for having me. It was fun. I could use any excuse to watch a movie nowadays, honestly. I need to watch them more often.
So was this film a hit or a miss with you?
Oh, 100% a hit. I really, really liked it.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for any like early 2000s nostalgia. Yeah. And that definitely had it.
You know, I just remembered, I think the reason why he had that fake memory of Joseph Gordon-Levitt being on Broadway is because he was on Saturday Night Live one time. He hosted once. And his opening scene, his opening monologue was him singing Make Him Laugh. And they can't have it on YouTube because they didn't have the copyright to use that song in the first place. So like any recording you see on YouTube or online is a bootleg of that thing. And I remember watching it live. I remember watching that scene live. Like I was being very impressed. Like, oh, this guy sings and dances and he's doing all these flips and going on and everything. But how like the audience was so unresponsive to him. Like, I'm like, yo, cheer, guys, cheer. What the hell? Like, you guys are the worst audience. Like, why he's doing this for you? He's trying to make you laugh, but y'all ain't just, oh,
I would love to go to Saturday Night Live one day.
I want to host it live. I want to host one day.
One day. Invite me. I'll be in the audience. I don't want to host. I'll just be in the audience.
So, Latest, where can we find you on social media?
I really just have Instagram. I'm at LLCoolM. Like LL Cool J, but my last name is Morel. And yeah, I think that's it really. I only have Instagram. I have a TikTok, but I never get on it. Yeah.
What about your
Twitter? Etsy. I don't get on it. Etsy is called Bejeweled by Latest. Bejeweled like the Taylor Swift song, Jeweled.
Awesome. Well, that's it for City of Folks. This was season 6, episode 7. I have to keep track now. My name is Jason, and until next time, cross off a new film from your list.